Welcome to the program, Noam Chomsky.
Glad to be with you again.
I want to talk to you about Iran. Bush administration rhetoric on Iran echoes similar comments it made about Iraq. The president calls Iran the world's primary state sponsor of terrorism. The Secretary of State calls the country something to be loathed. The Defense Secretary Rumsfeld said the Iranian regime is today the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism. And accompanying that, it's kind of reproduced in the media. Here's the February 13th cover story of Newsweek, the next nuclear threat. How dangerous is Iran? And there's a very grim photo of the Iranian president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Where is U.S. policy going on Iran?
Well, U.S. policy has been fairly consistent with regard to Iran for over half a century. There's variations depending on circumstances, but the guiding principles are the same. So here people sort of pretend it's ancient history, but the people who hold the clubs typically like to forget history, say it's irrelevant. But the people who are hit by the clubs tend to remember history for good reasons, because it teaches you something. If we want to learn about it, we should be with the victims. They are the correct in this. Crucial, relevant parts of U.S. policy towards Iran begin, of course, with the overthrow of the parliamentary government in 1953 by a U.S. British-backed, initiated military coup. Installed the Shah, one of the most brutal tyrants of the last half century, supported him fully to the end. A couple of months before he was overthrown, President Carter was telling him how much the Iranian people love him because he's so marvelous and so on. He was overthrown in 1979. There were hostages taken at the time of the crisis. The only event that exists in American history is that hostages were taken, not 25 years of terror and torture after the overthrow of the government. But Iranians look at it differently. This is more history. Ever since that time, the United States has tried to destroy the government. They began by, right away, Carter sent a NATO general to try to instigate a military coup. U.S. had close relations with the Iranian military. And that didn't work. They started providing the Iranian military with arms. That's the way you overthrow a civilian government. You arm the military, providing them with arms via Israel with Saudi Arabian money, which makes sense because Iran, Saudi Arabia, Israel, and Turkey were the allies in controlling Middle East oil. That didn't work. Then the U.S. supported Iraq's war against Iran. Iraq invaded Iran. Saddam Hussein is now on trial for crimes that he committed in 1982. If we had a free press in the country, they would be pointing out that 1982 is quite an important year in U.S.-Iraqi-Iranian relations. Now, that was the year in which Reagan took Iraq off the list of terrorist states, states supporting terror, and the reason was so that he could provide Iraq with aid, including means to develop weapons of mass destruction, nuclear weapons, biotoxins, chemical weapons, and so on. At that time, it was primarily for the war against Iran, although the aid continued, the same aid, long after that war was over. There were other reasons. Donald Rumsfeld, who you quoted, was sent to Iraq to finalize the deal with their friend Saddam. Well, you know, Iranians don't forget this. I mean, they lost a huge number of casualties to the U.S.-backed Iraqi aggression, the chemical weapons, other atrocities, and so on. And it continues until today. And the basic reason is simply that Iran disobeyed orders. Overthrowing a U.S.-installed tyrant is not acceptable behavior. In one or another way, they have to be punished for it. The Iranian people have to be punished for it. So they've been under harsh sanctions, now threats of attack, not just threats, preparations for attack. So Israel is a small country, but it's more or less by now a U.S. offshore military base, so it has a very powerful military force. It has the most advanced and largest air force of larger than any, and technologically more advanced than any NATO power outside the U.S. And for the last couple of years, the U.S. has been sending advanced, over 100 advanced jet bombers to Israel, very publicly advertised as, you know, capable of, hence with the intention of bombing Iran, equipped with what are called special weapons in the Hebrew press. No one knows what that means, but it's for the ears of Iranian intelligence. They're supposed to make a worst case analysis. And the invasion of Iraq puts, and Afghanistan puts U.S. forces surrounding Iran, the major nuclear power in the region. I'm the only serious nuclear power in the region is Israel, hundreds of nuclear weapons, other weapons of mass destruction. Pakistan has nuclear weapons. Iran is simply surrounded by hostile forces. The invasion of Iraq was a very clear signal, quite well understood everywhere, that if you want to deter a U.S. invasion, you have to have some kind of deterrent. Well, one deterrent is terror. Another deterrent is just nuclear weapons. So it's basically a plea to Iran to develop nuclear weapons, and that's understood. One of Israel's leading military historians, Martin von Krefeld, wrote, I think it was in the International Herald Tribune, that, of course, doesn't want Iran to get nuclear weapons, but he said if they're not doing it, they're crazy, given the strategic situation. Well, let's come closer to the present. 2 years ago, the European Union and Iran made a bargain. Iran is enriching uranium for development of nuclear energy. If that's what they're doing, it's entirely within the framework of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. In fact, it's a little bit ironic at MIT where we now are, I should say, because it must have been 1977, MIT made a deal with the Shah of Iran, pretty much to sell him the nuclear engineering department. The deal was that MIT would train lots of Iranian nuclear engineers, and in return the Shah would pay some big sum of money. That leaked, led to a huge protest on campus by students who were overwhelmingly opposed to it. And the faculty equally overwhelmingly approved it. All of this is done, if not at U.S. government initiative, certainly with their support. At that time, Henry Kissinger was explaining that Iran needs nuclear energy. It has to preserve its petrochemicals for other purposes. Now Henry Kissinger, he's just a symbol, same with everyone, is saying, no, they can't possibly need nuclear energy. They have so much petroleum and gas reserves, so they must be developing nuclear weapons. It's the same programs. In fact, Kissinger was asked about this, and he said, well, then they were an ally, so then they needed nuclear energy. Now they broke out of our control, so they don't need nuclear energy. Well, are they developing enrichment of uranium, which is legal under the NPT, is not a long step from developing nuclear weapons. So, you know, who knows? Maybe von Krefeld is correct, and they're not crazy, but we don't know. Anyway, 2 years from 2 years ago, the European Union did make a bargain with them that Iran would stop enriching uranium, though they're legally entitled to do it. And in return, here's the other half of the bargain, the European Union would provide firm guarantees on security issues. Now, the phrase security issues refers to U.S.-Israeli threats to bomb Iran, which are very serious. And by U.S. standards, Iran ought to be carrying out terrorist acts in the United States. In fact, we ought to be demanding that they do it. They're under far greater threat than anything Bush or Blair ever conjured up, and that's supposed to authorize what they call anticipatory self-defense, namely attack. Well, you know, they can't bomb the United States, but they could do something else. Of course, that's totally outrageous, but that just tells you something about U.S.-British standards. However, Europe did not live up to its half of the bargain. Under U.S. pressure, it backed off. It did not make any offer to provide any guarantees of security. After a couple of years, Iran backed off from its side of the bargain. Now that brings us up to the present, with Europe refusing to live up to the bargain, the U.S. and Israel continuing, extending, in fact, the threats to security, which are serious, and Iran, we don't know. Maybe they're probably back to enriching uranium, and we don't know what purposes. I mean, if there were any interest, certainly no one wants Iran to get nuclear weapons. If there were any interest in preventing that, what would happen is you would reduce the threats, which are making it likely that they'll develop them as a deterrent, and implement the bargain that was made, and then move towards integrating Iran into the general international economic system, or remove the sanctions, which are against the people, not the government, and just bring them into the world system. The U.S. refuses. Europe is so cowardly that they do what the U.S. orders them to do. One of the problems that the U.S. is facing is that China is not intimidated. That's why the U.S. is so frightened of China. You see headlines and front pages, how dangerous is China? Well, the primary danger of China, of all the major powers, nuclear powers, China has been the most restrained in its development of offensive weaponry actions and so on. But China is frightening because it is not intimidated. Europe will back off and China won't. So European companies, frightened of the United States, have backed away from investments in Iran, but China just proceeds. That's why the U.S. is so terrified of China. If you're the mafia don and somebody doesn't pay protection money, that's scary, especially when you can't do anything about it. And what may happen, I mean, the Bush administration may succeed in driving Iran into the Asian energy security system. Iran has options.